Good morning, Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
The fight.
What's your assessment of how the search and rescue operation went?
So I think I draw two lessons from it, Ed. First of all, the excellence of the Joint Force, our ability to rapidly pivot to look for a downed air crewman. We train for this endlessly. It's a part of every time we send air crew over enemy territory. We have detailed, elaborate plans to go get them. It's a very basic part of who we are as American fighting men and women. So that plan swung into action. I think it was executed pretty effectively.
I love that you said swang. It swang into action. Talking like a general, sure. Retired former commander of CENTCOM Central Command, General Frank McKenzie, yesterday was on Face the Nation with Ed O'Keefe filling in for Margaret Brennan. Of course, they were talking primarily, first of all, about the rescue that took place inside Iran of both a pilot and also the WISO, or the weapons systems officer from the F-15E that did get shot down from probably a man pad. We'll talk about more about that in just a second. But back to his assessment of the rescue effort.
As always, you've got somebody on the ground, maybe injured. They got to get to a position where they can hide until you can get to them. All that seemed to work out very well. And, you know, we did, in fact, lose a couple of aircraft in that mission. But I would just tell you, it takes a year to build an aircraft. It takes 200 years to build a military tradition where you don't leave anybody behind. You take the aircraft trade any day in a situation like this.
That is such a great line. That was all over the news yesterday. Is, you know, it takes only a year to build an aircraft. It takes 200 years to build a military tradition where we do not leave anybody behind. I mean, the logician in me wants to say the parallels, it takes a year to build an aircraft. It takes 20 or 25 years to build a person who's your colonel. But no, that's a great line, and that's exactly right. In fact, some of the other, sort of side comments were, oh my gosh, all this materiel, the French term for military equipment that gets used sometimes, all this materiel got lost just to save one person. Yeah, that's what we do. Well, how much is a life worth? As much as it takes. Right? I mean, that's the whole point. And how much more loyal and motivated are your people when they know that that's what will be expended for them? And, of course, a not unfair comparison is, and look at everything that we left behind when we vacated Afghanistan, and lost 13 people in the process, right? Like, it's awful, the comparison. Anyway, so yeah, absolutely. 200 years to build the tradition, and that's essential. This was an amazing, amazing rescue operation. Now, they talked about some other things yesterday that I'll probably get to maybe a little bit later, maybe in this segment. We'll see. But because they talked about things like, the future of the conflict. Oh, actually, sorry. There was one other lesson he wanted to mention.
The other lesson, I think, is a hard lesson for Iran. First of all, they were not able to find the missing air crewmen. Second, they put out a broad appeal to their people to turn him in, reward, asking for all kinds of leads. That does not appear to have been successful. And that would, I think that's maybe a sign of disaffection, don't know. But you can't be happy with that if you're a senior leader in Tehran this morning.
Yeah, they had put out a bounty on the WISO's head of $60,000. And the reports are, a lot of what I'm going to say in this segment is, this is what we definitely know, this is what we think we know, this is kind of what we suspect might be true. I'll put this in the, it sounds plausible. I don't have a lot of confirmation on it. But at least one report that I saw indicated that, locals were helping and that a village had 20 people got arrested by the Iranians for after the fact being alleged to have helped him somehow or other. So their own people, right? Remember, I've said this before, that the leadership in Iran is one thing, but the people in Iran are a different thing. And not all the people are on, the leadership side. The Iranian state media likes to say a bunch of things that turn out to be marginally true. They're showing all the people scouring the countryside with their old rifles or whatever. Okay, but were there people actually helping? I mean, you can certainly understand that being plausible. Okay, so what actually happened? Well, it's a long story. And like I said, there are things that we know to be true and things that we think are true and so forth. But basically, you had this F-15E get shot down. They still have capabilities. I mean, not amazing capabilities, but they still have some capability. So it gets shot down. The pilot goes down in one area, and the WISO, or the weapons systems officer, that's the backseater, goes down in a different area. The first one, the pilot, gets rescued pretty quickly. Not without incident, but, you know, gets rescued pretty quickly. And then we're trying to rescue the second one, and he's involved in, you know, search and evasion, okay? The SEER training comes in key here. That's how they learn. All the pilots learn how to do this stuff. So it's the first one has been shot down in more than 20 years, and he had a handgun to defend himself, and, you know, he was wounded, okay? You know, hurt, at least. So we sent in a lot of stuff. Part of what we sent in was two C-130s carrying commandos, it looks like, okay? You know, I don't know if they came out of Hurlburt or not. I don't know where they came from, but, you know, two C-130s carrying people in to help. The C-130s got stuck in the mud. This is, I would say, the stuck in the mud part is, I give that about 80%, okay, reliability. But they got stuck or something happened, and we were not then able to take off with them. Well, what do you do for the people that you brought in? Okay, well, we sent in three, and again, I give this about, I think this is right, about 70%, other C-130s to go in and carry those guys out. Two Black Hawk helicopters were also accompanying them. That's the 60s that the Air Force flies. That's the, like, think Black Hawk Down, okay, the big ugly, okay, that you've seen a million times if you've, you know, watched anything at the military. And we sent those in, and so eventually the C-130s, they did manage to get out okay. We didn't leave the C-130s, the two C-130s that were stuck in the mud. We did not leave those for the Iranians to capture and use. We blew them up. Of course, they claim they shot them down. It's not true. Just, you know, the standard battle doctrine is if you can't take it, blow it up. So the enemy cannot use it, right? The Blackhawks themselves were also, after we managed to catch up with him, which was an amazing story of how he evaded capture. He climbed 7,000 feet up into this mountain, this rock crevice. He's got people all around looking for him. We engage in a misinformation campaign. We already had the pilot back, but the CIA was spreading the lie that we were in, you know, they didn't want to say they had the pilot back because that would indicate by contrast we didn't have the other guy back. Then the CIA spread this lie that we had already gotten in touch with the WIZO, the weapons systems officer, the backseater, and we were working on getting him out by ground. That was false. We didn't have him yet at the time. We were bombing roads that went to his location so that they couldn't get troops in. They sent some IRGC people in, it looks like, and some of those folks got killed. So they couldn't even get their own people into the site in their own country safely without losing them. And we managed to get everybody out, including a down pilot and a down WIZO, safely without losing anybody. It was some planes, you know. A Warthog also got shot. It's an A-10. Also got shot at. That pilot managed to get it back over Kuwaiti airspace and eject and ditch his plane. So two C-130s and an A-10 and the F-15. The Blackhawks, I'll tell you more in a second. John Pickens has got traffic on the fives. John?
That's right. We're still rolling accident-free, even delay-free. I'm seeing nothing that's going to slow you down. But don't forget that Barrancas to I Street is closed starting today. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Thanks, John. So back to the what we think we know about the rescue attempt. Okay, the president's going to update us at 1 o'clock today. We might learn more, I think, at that time, some of the details. But a lot of this is kind of, we're mostly sure, you know, I'm giving you my best pieced together version of all of this based on various sources, and I wouldn't tell you anything that I suspect is not true. I'm just telling you some of the details here may turn out not to be quite what I'm saying, but I think this is as close as you can get to understanding it. So we had these two Blackhawks, and they had gotten I believe it was the WIZO. They had gotten him. It might have been, yeah. They gotten the WIZO on board, and they got shot. That plane got shot, and people on board were wounded during the extraction, but they were able to keep flying. I think the other Black Hawk, there was another Black Hawk that also got hit. I've seen conflicting reports about whether we lost yet another one or how much it was damaged or not, and I think both of those got back okay. But, yeah, you know, that part, we may find out more things along the way. So, massive operation. Very, you know, intelligence operation, Air Force operation, you know, using all kinds of resources. And eventually, again, you know, three replacement C-130s got out okay. The two first C-130s got in and got stuck, and we blew those up. A Black Hawk or maybe two that were damaged with some crew wounded in the process. An A-10 destroyed, but the pilot ejected safely over Kuwaiti airspace, the F-15E that went down. So they get shot down. They evade capture for well more than a day with a bounty on their head. The CIA runs a special op, an intelligence operation. Special operators fight in. There was a huge actual firefight when the Black Hawks did get to him and battling locals on the ground. So that was also a part of this. It wasn't like this neat, nifty get in and get out kind of operation. And in the end, we got him out, got them out safely. Nobody died. Amazing. I mean, just unbelievably. This is movie stuff. This is crazy. This is in another country. This is just, I mean, it's unbelievable. So when he says, you know, it went pretty well. I love generals, you know, how'd it go? Well, we train for this and this is what we do. Yeah, a little bit of an understatement. Here's the other piece I want you to be aware of. This is the, why might this be relevant to you aside from all of the details? John, I'm going to test your knowledge here. You ready?
Oh, boy.
It's early on a Tuesday.
I know it is.
We always talk about NES Whiting Field, right? On Friday, we're
Today's
talking.
Monday.
What did I say?
Tuesday.
Whatever.
On Friday,
we were talking about how the Artemis mission, right?
Okay.
And the commanding officer trained for a time on the fixed wing. He was part of training Air Wing 5 up at the VT-6, the shooters. It's VT-6 shooters. If you think about it, six shooters. It's kind of part of their... Anyway.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, so and so we can claim him as not just NES Pensacola for initial flight training for the two members of the mission, but the commanding officer definitely trained at Whiting. So we love touching our, you know, local training commands or whatever. So now here's a question. This is how much were you paying attention when we were doing the tenant commands series? You ready? The Air Force. Okay, so the Navy does backseat trainers, right? Yeah, naval flight officers, they call them, right? That's the people. That's Goose from Top Gun.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Although they do not fly F-14s anymore, right? They fly F-18s and F-35s, okay? But the backseat pilots, the weapons systems officer or the, you know, used to be, now they're called NFOs. They train where? They learn how to be NFOs where?
That was at NAS.
Which one?
Pensacola.
That's right. They train at NAS Pensacola. That's who's up in the Goshawks, you know, the T-45s you see flying around. That's the backseaters learning. That platform gets used elsewhere to train the actual jet pilots, but this is training NFOs right here. That's Mongo used to be involved in that. He used to be the commodore of that wing, then he's other things. But yes, that's training Air Wing 6. Air Force has backseaters. They train combat systems officers. One kind of CSO is a WISO, weapon systems officer. That's who the colonel that was rescued, okay, is a WISO. Where do they train?
Same place.
That's it.
Okay. Do you? So,
now, I was like the 479th Flying Training Group. Remember Seamus's command that mm-hmm. we had on. You know. We don't know yet because we don't know his name. We don't know yet because over the years, WISOs have trained in different places, and depending on when they got trained. At one time, they were even being trained by Training Wing 6. So, you know, even Mongo might have potentially, depending on, you know, might have trained him. You know, so it's like we don't know whether it was within the Navy training or whether it was elsewhere or whether it was back here when the 479th was stood up. But here's the thing. I was talking to somebody yesterday who reminded me, whether this colonel did or did not train here at NAS Pensacola, we'll find out eventually, maybe, you know. But all of the other backseaters who were flying missions all the time in Iran for the Air Force and all kinds of other people who were involved in this operation definitely trained here. Even if there weren't Navy, and a lot of people don't know this, and that's why I'm telling you, even if there weren't, you know, Navy backseaters involved, or even if there weren't Navy pilots involved, although if they were any kind of Navy helicopters, of course, Whiting, but the backseat, the WISOs or the CISOs for the Air Force train here also. And so it's just, you know, we are a massive training command with all kinds of dimensions. And, you know, when we talk about air in particular, it touches Pensacola one way or another so much of the time. 624 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay.
Healing can start with a single seed.
A single space.
A single act of kindness.
I'm Lieutenant Kilgan with Escambia County Sheriff's Office. For over 20 years in Pensacola law enforcement, I've seen heartbreaking child abuse cases.
Gulf Coast Kids House provides therapy to help these children recover.
That's why Leadership Pensacola's Class of 2026 is assisting Gulf Coast Kids House in creating a healing garden to support their therapists.
Your support today helps plant seeds of healing for tomorrow.
Visit PensacolaChamber.com to donate to the LEAP Class Project.
You know, if you need to sell or buy a home, you want somebody who knows what they're doing, has solved a lot of problems, has done it a lot before. Christina Leavenworth and her team at Leavenworth Realty last year sold 209 homes. A crazy number. I mean, that's four a week, just over and over and over. I mean, some weeks is eight, some weeks is one, some weeks, you know, I mean, but it's a lot of homes. And that's a lot of collective experience. Solving problems for people with unique challenges, like maybe it's an estate sale, or maybe, you know, if a marriage is breaking up and they got to sell the home, that's not always the easiest thing to do because people who can't agree, okay? Or if it's just an ordinary sale, or, you know, sometimes people have had other realtors that could not sell the house. That's common enough. Christina tells me that the market has gotten super weird all of a sudden. You know, houses that were sitting for a month are now, like, just getting multiple offers. Like, it's crazy. But also, for some people, they just have not been able to sell. And so she takes over those listings. Second, third, fifth realtor on the list, which is crazy, but they get those homes sold. My point is, give her a call. You may have a list of people that you're thinking about using, but just include her on the list. Add her to the list and call her and ask her, you know, what does she do well? 786-3996 for Christina Leavenworth and her team at Leavenworth Realty.
Wednesday, Pensacola Sports will be the guests on the Pensacola Expert Panel. Pensacola Sports' focus has, and always will be, on education, inspiration, and participation in various team, individual, amateur, and professional sports activities. Tune in Wednesday at 10:30 as Pensacola Sports will be discussing their upcoming events on Pep Talk.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Text or call with...
When storms pop up fast, it helps to already know where to go.
We've got all the details.
News Radio 92.3.
92.3.
Informative, local, dependable.
Finish him. Liu Kang wins. Flawless victory. Fatality.
Are you remembering or are you not familiar?
No, I'm familiar. I'm just trying to put... Where?
The Mortal Kombat?
Yes.
You can't remember Mortal Kombat kills?
Finish him.
Finish him. Flawless fatality. 626 on News Radio 92.3. Somebody texts me and says, when the Wizzo went through training here, he would have gone through VT-86 with the Navy. That's the within training air wing 6. I always want to mess up 5 and 6, Whiting versus Pensacola, so I apologize for that. Before the Air Force had its own program based on the timeline for somebody of his rank, because a colonel in the Air Force is a captain in the Navy in the timeline. And I speculate that, too. But I had talked with a couple of people who they said they weren't as sure of what that would be, and that even there were times when they were training elsewhere, including... where was the one? There was another one where maybe somebody, I'm trying to, no, I cannot find it all of a sudden. Anyway, so I just don't want to say it and have it be wrong. And certainly many other backseaters and many other Wizzos, and Sizzos who are involved in some of this stuff, trained here for sure in the Air Force. John Pickens has traffic on the fives. John?
Trey, brought to you by Knox Pest Control, their family serving your family since 1929. For information on a free pest or termite quote, visit knoxpest.com. Knox knocks them out. No accidents to report to you right now, but the front gate of NAS is backed up past sunset, so be aware of that. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the five.
Thanks so much, John. One person I was talking to who is a colonel and got his training at Randolph, so it kind of the training had moved around, I think, and so it's just not, we're not sure. That's all. I don't want to say it if it's not true. But I speculate you may be right, for sure. Let's see. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Well, good morning, gentlemen. The Artemis II crew is preparing to fly by the lunar surface today while in their Orion spacecraft. The four astronauts will come within 4,000 miles of the surface of the moon at their closest approach. They'll also lose communications with ground control for about 40 minutes today as they pass behind the dark side of the moon. Savannah Guthrie is back on NBC today. She's returning to the Today Show. She's been on leave since her mother, Nancy, disappeared from her home in Tucson, Arizona, back in February. And the parents of a toddler are facing charges after authorities say the child entered a wolf enclosure at a zoo in Hershey, Pennsylvania. Police say it was a 17-month-old child that squeezed through a small opening in the fence of the wolf enclosure over the weekend. The parents apparently were paying attention to their cell phones and not watching. Hershey Entertainment and Resorts said the child reached their hand through and one of the wolves grabbed onto it. Bystanders were luckily able to pull the child away.
All right, David, thank you so much for the update. 629 News Radio 92.3. Somebody texted me and said, why would we send in some C-130s? I assume, I'm inferring, as nobody has said this, but I'm assuming because, you know, people on the ground with weapons is how you go ward off the enemy who's on the ground with weapons in order to get your guy. It'd be my guess. The other, somebody else said, I need to give some credit to the SEER training that he got. Where was this? All these texts are coming. Fairchild Air Force Base in Washington State would have been survival school for him. And yeah, absolutely. Crucial. Absolutely crucial. You have that training for, survival, evade, resist, and escape, I think are the, what SEER stands for, if I remember. Yeah, survival, evasion, resistance, escape. Hey, I remember an acronym right. Sometimes you
good
go on
job.
Memory. And you hope this stuff sinks in enough. Oh, man. All right. 6:30 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. We'll be back in just a moment. Thanks so much for listening on Monday morning. Happy Easter, by the way. Retroactive.
Fox News, I'm Gianna Gelosi. Iran mediators making a last-ditch push for a 45-day ceasefire.
A new report today in Reuters says a framework to end hostilities has been put together by Pakistan in exchange with Iran and the U.S. overnight, outlining a two-tier approach with an immediate ceasefire followed by a comprehensive agreement. Despite these diplomatic conversations, U.S. and Israeli planes continue to hammer the Iranian regime.
That's Fox's Trey Yinks. Now, the IDF confirms the chief of intelligence of the IRGC has been killed in overnight strikes. The four astronauts of the Artemis II going to swing by the far side of the moon, farther than any human has gone before, and they're still dealing with toilet issues.
Without changing course, the crew turned their Orion spacecraft to expose an external vent nozzle to the sun in an effort to melt what engineers believe is frozen urine.
Fox's Jonathan Sari. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 6:31 at News Radio 92.3. We've got 59 degrees right now with cloudy skies. We'll get to our full forecast. Brooke Richardson has that for us in just a few minutes. A chain reaction crash near a convenience store in Escambia County sent a pickup truck plowing through a parking lot and into a food truck on Saturday. FHP says a Dodge Ram pickup truck rear-ended a Chevy Silverado on 95A, which is near Tate School Road. The impact redirected the Ram into a parking lot where it hit two parked vehicles and a taco food truck, injuring a 26-year-old man that was inside. The truck finally came to rest after hitting a utility pole. The Ram's driver, a 46-year-old Flomaton man, was taken to the hospital with non-serious injuries and cited for careless driving. The driver of the Silverado was reportedly not hurt. Northwest Florida high school students took to the track at Five Flags Speedway over the weekend, racing custom-built electric go-karts as part of Florida Power & Light's Electrathon program. Teams from Navarre High School, West Florida High School of Advanced Technology, Northview High School, and Magnet Innovation Center competed against other teams from all across the state. Students designed and built their own electric vehicles using STEM principles while developing critical thinking and teamwork skills. FPL sponsors the Electrathon program at nearly 30 schools statewide. A family of six has been displaced after an Okaloosa County fire. That happened Saturday night in Fort Walton Beach. Ashley Strickland and her five children were luckily not home at the time, so nobody was hurt, but the home was destroyed. The Red Cross is helping the family stay in a hotel. Meanwhile, a GoFundMe has been set up to help her and her kids with their immediate needs and to begin rebuilding. The goal is to raise $10,000. So far, they've raised about $3,500. Senator Rick Scott is, in his words, overjoyed that an American pilot was rescued in Iran. President Trump, of course, announcing that successful rescue mission yesterday of the man that he described as being a highly respected colonel. Senator Scott says the prayers of countless Americans have been answered, and he is grateful for the daring and decisive work of the search and rescue operation. Senator Ashley Moody also called the mission an incredible undertaking and a powerful reminder of our commitment to never leave a service member behind. Well, for the first time now in almost 2 years, it's time to play ball at Tropicana Field. The Tampa Bay Rays are holding their home opener today against the Chicago Cubs. It'll be the first game at the at Tropicana Field in 561 days. Renovations cost about $60 million. Rays CEO Kevin Babby says rebuilding from Hurricanes Milton and Helene was a truly heroic effort. It is 6:35 here at News Radio 92.3. Let's check in with John Pickens, who's got a look at our traffic on the fives.
That's right. No accidents to report to you right now, but the front gate of NAS is backed up past Sunset, so be aware of that. And also, Barrancas to I Street is closed. They're just starting the construction there today. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
We are going to be looking at temperatures warming up today around 68 degrees with some breezy conditions. Mostly cloudy skies. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 54. As you go into Tuesday, mostly sunny skies, high near 76. Tuesday night, temperatures dropping near 59 degrees. Heading into Wednesday, mostly sunny skies, high near 75. And Wednesday night, temperatures dropping near 60 degrees. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Warning Weather Center.
Thank you very much, Brooke. It's 59 degrees right now with cloudy skies across the area. Our next news at 7 o'clock, breaking news anytime it happens. I'm David Wayne for News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable.
I'm Nicole Murray with Your Money Now. Treasury yields held steady this morning as investors awaited President Trump's upcoming press conference on the Iran war and key inflation data due this week. The yield on the 10-year Treasury added less than one basis point to 4.3525%. The 2-year Treasury also gained less than one basis point at 3.856%. Oil prices have slid this morning after President Trump gave Iran a new deadline to reopen the Strait of Hormuz or face a tax on its power plants. West Texas Intermediate currently at roughly $110 per barrel, Brent currently sitting at $108. Investors are caught between positioning for a swift deal that ends the Iran war and a significant escalation that could send oil prices and bond yields soaring further. President Trump has issued an ultimatum, warning Iran it would be living in hell if the Strait of Hormuz is not reopened by tomorrow at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. Futures are mixed as oil prices tick higher. Thursday, the Dow Industrials lost 61. That's Your Money Now.
I know that hiring can be challenging. You sort through tons of resumes and you get too many so-so applicants. You're just waiting for someone to match your role perfectly. Well, now, there's a place where you can meet them fast. ZipRecruiter.
Need to hire right away. Start your search for strong candidates. The right fit awaits. Build your team. Build it sooner. Meet your match on ZipRecruiter.
Just head to ZipRecruiter.com/free right now to try it for free. And you're on your way to meeting your match. 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. So try it now. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/free. Once again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/free.
Meet your match on ZipRecruiter.
Looking for the best in flooring? At Jonathan's Flooring, you can select beautiful luxury vinyl plank flooring with the texture of wood, waterproof, and longer lasting. Jonathan's Flooring offers the most affordable pricing, first-class workmanship and installation, with a large selection of tile, carpet, or the latest in luxury vinyl plank flooring. Performance and sustainability is what makes Jonathan's Flooring the best choice for your floors. Stop by Jonathan's Flooring on North Palafox, south of 9 Mile Road, or online at jonathansflooring.com.
Bands on the Beach is back. Bring a lawn chair or a towel and enjoy live music at the stage on Pensacola Beach. There's plenty of room to spread out and enjoy the sand, the sunset, and great live music every Tuesday night at 7. This week, it's the Calverts, one of the Gulf Coast's hottest and newest bands, bringing classic rock, rhythm and blues, and high-energy hits from the 60s to today. Their motto, if you can't dance to it, they don't play it. See you for the first Bands on the Beach.
You don't need someone yelling at you.
You just want someone to say what you're already thinking.
That's MVR. Markley, Van Camp, and Robbins. They take the biggest stories of the day, cut through the nonsense, and say the quiet part out loud.
The American people have had enough.
Well, except for white women 55 plus.
There are a lot of white women that lean left.
Usually with a little sarcasm.
Thankfully, we know all the sane ones.
MVR. Weekdays 11 till 2 on News Radio 92.3, 95.3, AM 1620. Informative, local, dependable.
A singer in a smoky room, the smell of wine and cheap perfume. For a smile they can share the night. It goes on and on and on and on.
So given what's going on in the Middle East, I'm curious, is the war with Iran justified?
I would think under the just war theory, it is not, because while there was a threat with nuclear arms, it's compensating for a threat before the threat is actually realized. And I think there I would line myself up with Pope Leo, who has been urging for negotiation.
First, let's give credit where it's due. How many times have I mentioned to you that Face the Nation and CBS has some of the best guest bookers around? They get the right interviews. They had the former CENTCOM Commander General Frank McKenzie. Here they have Timothy Broglio, who is an archbishop. Guess which diocese is his?
New York.
Close.
Oh.
He is with the Diocese for the Military Services.
Oh.
He's literally the archbishop for the military in the United States. So this is certainly within his domain. He's exactly the right person to ask. And so CBS, Face the Nation, had him on. And I also give credit. They're asking exactly the right question. The Pope has said some pretty stern things about this war and about war in general. I kind of wish they would have pressed a little bit more on the, you know, God doesn't hear the prayers of people who are engaged in warfare. Like, I mean, there's a lot in the Bible that contradicts that. I know he was contextually talking about Iran, but, you know, the statement did not specify only that. Anyway, but he does ask the question about, is this war a just war? Which is a good question to ask the Archbishop for the Diocese of the Military Services. Perfectly appropriate. And his answer is, it's not. I disagree with his answer. But his answer is because they did not represent a direct threat. They had not acted on that threat. This was preemptive at best. Now, I think the preemption in this case is justified. He does not think that it is. But, okay, that's a difference of viewpoint, let's say, between somebody who is the Archbishop of the Diocese of Military Services and somebody who's, a philosopher who's studied a fair bit of just war theory. We could talk about it. But he goes on.
I realize also that you could say, well, with whom are you going to negotiate? And that is a problem. But in the meantime, lives are being lost both there and also among our troops. So it is a concern.
By the way, my answer, in case you're sort of new to the show or just didn't hear me talking about it all the times I've talked about it before, which is fine, okay? The reason it qualifies for just war theory's approval is precisely because the Iranians have been sponsoring terror across the region. They have been directly involved in several attacks against us and other people in the region. And over the last 47 years, they have made themselves a legitimate military target by their behavior, ongoing behavior. That combined with their active pursuit of a nuclear program followed up by their active pursuit of a missile shield deterrence capability. If you remember the Rubio speech, their ability to protect their ability to go to a nuclear weapons program. All of these things in combination absolutely make them a legitimate target of preemptive and not even preemptive, but reactive to the fact that they have been attacking over all the years. So, no, I disagree with him, and the point of continuing to negotiate is that continuing to negotiate is allowing them to have their way, which will eventually produce a nuclear-equipped Iran, which we cannot have. Okay, so that's why we disagree on the issue of whether it is a just form of preemption and or response to, like we've said, they've been in war against us for 47 years. We're finally playing. Not playing, but you get my point. We're finally participating. Anyway, so then he's asking the follow-up question. And again, kudos to Ed Keefe for asking this question, which is, okay, you and the Pope have said this is an unjust war. What does that mean for members of the American military? Because I think that you're in a very awkward place if you say the war itself is unjust. Because if a war is unjust, you have to want, like, if we are engaged in an unjust war, you have to want us to not win. Saying it's an unjust war, but you want us to win doesn't make any sense. If it's an unjust war, you want the people engaged, do you want Russia to win the unjust war in Ukraine? No, you want them to lose. Do you want the ordinary Russians to die? No, not really, because it's not their fault. But you can't want the Russian military at large to win, right? You want them to fail. Hopefully they fail with as few deaths as possible, but you want them to fail. So if you say that America is engaged in an unjust war, at the least you want us to fail. Otherwise, what does unjust war mean, right? I mean, that's, so what do you tell people who are in the military when you've told them this is an unjust war?
And so if you're hearing from a service member who says, if your teachings, if your guidance is this is not justified, what am I to do as a Catholic who's in the service?
And that's a very good question, because obviously the way conscientious objection is set up in the United States military, you cannot object to a specific war or a specific action. You can only object to, I'm opposed to war.
Which I think he's right about that, but that doesn't solve the problem for the Catholic. You're not legally allowed to conscientiously object to a particular war. You're only allowed to conscientiously object to warfare at all. And therefore, you could not be drafted. You wouldn't be in the American military if you were a conscientious objector, for the exact reason that it's a volunteer army, volunteer Navy and Air Force, right? So what he's saying is you don't have protection for conscientious objection. But again, if the war is unjust and you're participating in it, it doesn't seem like the answer would be, well, you know, you're legally unprotected for objecting, therefore, I guess just go ahead. That's not, I mean, logically, that doesn't track. If it's an unjust war, how can you participate in it? So he's kind of giving, it's difficult, you know, if you give this advice, but it would seem like many times, you know, Christians give difficult advice. We'll come back to this in just a second. John Pickens has traffic on the fives. John?
That's right. Let's see here. No accidents to let you know about, but the front gate is backed up past sunset for NAS Pensacola. And also, Barrancas to I Street is scheduled to be closed today to start that construction project. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the five.
Thanks so much, John. So back to Archbishop Timothy Broglio, who is the Archbishop for the Diocese of Military Services, being asked by Ed O'Keefe on Face the Nation yesterday about, you know, the Pope's comments about war, about this war. He says it's unjust. Then questions, okay, so you're consulting with members of the military all the time. You have chaplains who are consulting with them all the time. What do you tell them to do?
I would think it depends on where you are in the chain of command. Obviously, you know, the Marine who's given an order, he's not in a position really to resist that order. I mean, he has to obey unless it's clearly immoral. And then he would probably have to speak to his, you know, to his chaplain, to his chain of command.
So the advice to him is to simply go along and to be engaged in warfare, which is going to involve killing people in the pursuit of what he's just called an unjust war. I mean, again, logically, that doesn't quite track. Logically, the advice should be, if you say the war is unjust and some Catholic is involved in frontline combat, I mean, the Catholic would have to object, and he's going to probably get court-martialed over it. But, you know, the Bible is replete with examples of the disciples opposing what the ruling authorities said. And what does it mean to say that you believe a war is unjust, but people should go ahead and participate anyway? That doesn't, I mean, that just doesn't make any sense. So I appreciate he's trying to give a nuanced answer. I'm certainly sympathetic to the plight of somebody who is a Catholic dealing with this advice coming from his religious leadership. It's not easy, but it seems like the advice that telling them it's an unjust war would imply is contrary to the advice that the Archbishop is giving in this particular case. So I don't know how to resolve this. It doesn't add up to me. The question then is, well, what about the leadership, right? Because that's a different issue. You have the ability to shape the warfare or the war itself.
The question might be, would generals or admirals have space to perhaps say, can we look at this a different way?
Right.
But having spoken to some of them too, they're also in the same dilemma. So I guess my counsel would be to do as little harm as you can, and to try and preserve innocent lives.
Well, they're already trying to do that, right? I mean, that's American standard military doctrine, is to try to do as little harm as possible and try to save as many lives as possible. In what way would his advice to a general or an admiral cause a difference of action by that general or admiral compared to a non-Catholic who doesn't believe the war is unjust? That's where what's the dividing line in terms of what they do differently? Because it sounds like the advice is, you know, try to counsel the president against this war. You may not have that opportunity, so now you're in the same position as everybody else. You're being ordered to do this. What do you do? Well, try to kill as few people as possible. You know, try to preserve life as much as possible. But again, that would only make a difference if it's different than what you would otherwise do. And so what does that mean? Like, drag your feet? You have to really think through the practical implications of what this moral guidance means. And, I mean, drag your feet is sort of to, you know, put sand in the gearbox, right? Is to slow down the machinery, which is a consistent piece of advice. If he's saying the war is unjust, you cannot just full-fledged participate, because then you're enthusiastically supporting something which your leadership and religion has said is unjust. You're almost acting like a sort of a saboteur in a way. Like, you're kind of impeding the mission, you know, either by using underwhelming force in sort of as kind of what he's implying, or using sort of ineffective tactics. You know what would work really well, but do less than that because the war itself is unjust. I mean, you see the real problems that deciding the war is unjust creates. And by the way, what would you say if you were the archbishop for the military in Russia? It's not an easy thing to answer. But logically, you'd have to say, well, I mean, we're involved in a war of aggression. I advise my people not to participate because it's an illegal war. It is an unjust war. You're being told to attack civilians. You cannot do that. In the prosecution of an unjust war, you cannot also use unjust tactics. And so the advice to a Christian in that situation is, who would otherwise maybe be okay as a member of the Russian military under ordinary circumstances, you might say. I mean, they have, you know, there are Christians in Russia. Vladimir Putin considers himself a Christian. Lots of Christians in Russia. Not necessarily as many Catholics, you know, Eastern Orthodox maybe more so. But the point is, Christians who have to take this same set of questions seriously. And it's, you know, what do you do in a totalitarian regime where if you say the war is unjust, maybe you get arrested, maybe you get killed? Well, that's the price. And what have Christians throughout the years, the centuries, have always said, right? Obey God, not man. Take your punishment. Get arrested. Get jailed. Maybe you get freed. Maybe you get crucified. I mean, there's, you know, these are real questions with real world implications. And it's not a serious answer to avoid the challenge. And these people are stuck in the, you know, they're stuck in the middle of the challenge. Again, particularly, I think American Catholics, I think the Catholic Church is wrong about this. I don't have any problem with this particular war. I think this war is just. I think the warfare is just. I think that what we're both are just, okay? So I don't have this problem. My Baptists and Methodists and, you know, Presbyterians that I might be in a position to counsel don't have this problem. But the Catholics have a problem, because your leadership is saying something very different from what Andrew McKay is saying. And I am not your spiritual mentor. They are. So last question he poses here is the analysis of Pete Hegseth's, essentially saying this is a just war. Jesus is on our side.
Regarding the rhetoric of, say, the Secretary of Defense, Pete Hegseth, who openly invokes Jesus repeatedly when talking about the war with Iran, especially, and has prayed openly from the Pentagon press room for blessings upon American service members. Obviously, his right to pray in public and however he sees fit. But what do you make of that sort of focus and sort of trying to cast this war as something that perhaps Jesus would justify?
It's a little bit problematic in the sense that the Lord Jesus certainly brought a message of peace, and also I think war is always a last resort. Now, you know, they may have information that led them to think that was the only choice they had. I'm not making a judgment about that because I really don't know. Mm-hmm.
That is a considerable concession. I'm glad he said it. It's reasonable. But he's acknowledging there may have been facts that the president and the intelligence community are aware of about the imminence of a threat that would change his analysis of whether this is a just war or not. Man, you should have led with that. That should have been early in the interview. You know, listen, Ed, I want to say something, which first of all is that the president and the leadership, or the president at least, have claimed there was some set of facts on the ground that made it urgent to act now. I'm not aware of that, because I'm not privy to that information. If that's so, that would certainly shape my analysis of whether this is a just war. On the other hand, we haven't been provided that information, and in the absence of that information, we have to question the validity of that, and it doesn't otherwise look like this is a just war. Well, that is a very different conclusion than, no, this is an unjust war, and just war theory doesn't support it. Okay, he follows up, though.
But I do think that it's hard to cast this war as something that would be sponsored by the Lord.
You know what I would have loved to have heard him say? I would have loved to have heard him say, well, can any warfare? Because the Pope has said what he's said about people who engage in war and God not hearing their prayers. I would have loved to have heard a reassuring message that members of the military can be Catholics in good conscience. As he is the Archbishop of the Diocese of the Military, you would think he would have that view clear in his head. I'm glad they did the interview. I'm glad he was asked some of the questions, and I think it's very revealing. Somebody says he sounds like a politician playing both sides. I felt that way, too. I mean, it's a hard position to be in. It really is. But, you know, men of faith think deeply, have their positions for reasons, and he ought to be able to give, I think, better, more consistent answers to these questions. 655 on News Radio 92.3, John Pickens has traffic for us. John?
Still rolling accident-free, but not delay-free. If you're trying to get on the front gate of NAS Pensacola, it is still backed up to Sunset. And also, Barrancas to I Street is scheduled to be closed today. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Are you an adult with uncontrolled moderate to severe Crohn's disease symptoms and still packing a backup bag of clothes just in case? Skyrizi Risankizumab Riza can help you take control of your Crohn's. Feel significant symptom relief, including less abdominal pain and fewer bowel movements at 4 weeks. Plus, Skyrizi is proven to help people achieve remission and visibly improve damage of the intestinal lining. Individual results may vary. Skyrizi is a prescription injection medicine. Don't use if allergic to Skyrizi. Serious allergic reactions, increased infections, or lower ability to fight them may occur. Before treatment, get checked for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor about any flu-like symptoms or vaccines. Liver problems leading to hospitalization may occur when treated for Crohn's. Ready to take control of your Crohn's? Ask your doctor about Skyrizi, the number one prescribed biologic in Crohn's disease. Control is everything to me. Learn more at SkyRizzy.com or call 1-866-SKYRIZZY.
You already know Squeegee Squad for spotless windows and powerful pressure washing, but this spring it's time to let the sunshine in. Squeegee Squad makes your windows crystal clear and your home shine again. And hey, put down the ladder. Their licensed insured pros handle the windows, the pressure washing, and the gutter cleaning so you don't have to. Residential or commercial. Windows, power washing, gutter cleaning, and more. Squeegee Squad does it all. Less grime, more shine. Call Squeegee Squad today and let your home sparkle this spring.
Hi, I'm Escambia County Sheriff Chip Simmons, inviting you to Cops, Cars, and Crawfish. It'll be April the 11th at Five Flags Speedway. This event will have a car show beginning at 7:30 until 9:30. At 10 o'clock, the gates will open. At 11 o'clock, we'll serve crawfish plates from Cubs Crawfish. We'll have hamburgers and hot dog plates. We'll have balloon animals, games, face painting, and more for the kids. All proceeds for this event will benefit the Escambia County Sheriff Foundation and their mission to support the heroes of the Escambia County Sheriff's Office. Cops, Cars, and Crawfish, April the 11th.
Hey, all the way. Hey, all the way.
The Pensacola Navy Days 4K, presented by Baptist Healthcare, is Saturday, May 9th. This fun run starts at Plaza de Luna, runs up Palafox along Bayfront to Veterans Park, and back to Plaza de Luna. Registrants receive a commemorative Pensacola Navy Days medal and race shirt. You can run or walk, and when you return to Plaza de Luna, you can celebrate with a beverage and stick around for the Family Fun Fest. Register now at PensacolaNavyDays.org. That's PensacolaNavyDays.org.
Something important happens.
You don't have time to wait.
Breaking news lives here.
Here.
On News Radio 92.3, 95.3 and AM 1620.
She has been disinvited from the Bellas.
That oath was serious?
Dixie Chick serious.
From my heart and from my hand, why don't people understand my intention?
Hey, just a quick clarification on the closure that is expected to start probably, I would assume, at 9 o'clock. But the note from the city of Pensacola is that starting today for 6 weeks, Main Street is going to be closed from Barrancas to I. So you have to go around Barrancas to I and then back down, or I to Barrancas if you're going westbound. Barrancas also in that stretch is supposed to be reduced from 4 lanes to 2 lanes. And then when that does reopen in 6 weeks, you will not be able to go westbound on Main and turn left on Barrancas. So that will be closed for like 3 months, for quite some time. David Wayne is in the newsroom with a headline for us. David?
Yeah. She was motivated to ask.
A small plane made an emergency landing on Interstate 78 in Allentown, Pennsylvania Saturday. I just saw the video on this. The plane just drops out of nowhere, makes a safe landing in between cars on the interstate.
Did he put his turn signal on?
Stream us at NewsRadio923.com. NewsRadio923.